This is our second week. I can't believe we've been doing this now, and we are having a great time. I want to say thank you to so many people who've texted me and said they're happy I'm back on the radio, and I am. I'm happy to be back, and we are going to keep you educated and smart as we head into this election season. And to that point, we are in studio with Josh Jacobson from Tucson Crime Free Coalition. And there is a wonderful, this is a film, correct?
We are going to be showing a documentary called The Gotaways.
Oh, The Gotaways, like all the people that we don't know that have gotten into our country that have come through the borders illegally. Are those the gotaways or something else?
Those are the ones. They're the individuals that are coming through the border that are trying to evade Border Patrol and law enforcement so they can make their way into the country without having any sort of record of them being here. And that's unlike the folks that are called the give-ups, the ones that are coming across the border. And here I am, I'm here, and I'm ready to be processed.
Well, they surrender, right? They mm-hmm. those people surrender. But the gotaways are people that my experience in talking with law enforcement are they may or may not have some kind of criminal record or be part of a criminal enterprise, so they don't want to be caught.
Right. There's a definite reason why they don't want it to be known that they're in the country. But this is an event that the Tucson Crime Free Coalition is hosting September 28th from noon to 4 at the Maverick. And the documentary, again, it's called The Gotaways, The Hidden Border Crisis. And followed by the documentary, we're going to have a forum. And the forum is going to be folks that are on the front line down in Cochise County. We've got law enforcement. We've got the county attorney coming up. And then here locally, we've got Heather Lappin. She's currently with the Pima County Sheriff's Department, and she is running for sheriff. She will also be taking part in the forum. And this is going to be an educational event. We're gearing this towards folks that might not fully understand what the situation is at the border, or they want to become better educated. And the whole intent here is to show the real world perspective from the people in the communities that are dealing with it every single day. And there's a lot of stuff that's going to be talked about that we don't see necessarily in our mainstream media.
So did Epic TV, mm-hmm. I'm going to assume that's Epic Times.
I believe that they're part of the same. Yep.
Okay. And so did they produce this film?
They did produce it, and I had the opportunity to go to a convention in Las Vegas, and there was a film festival, and this was one of the documentaries that was shown. I've got a good buddy named Taylor Davidson that's very involved in the film industry, and so he introduced me to the producers, and then he actually got us the ability to have it shown here locally. It is very well done. It is not... I describe it as not being political, with the exception that it is about the border. But, you know, even people that are saying the border is political, we're seeing a different conversation happening in the presidential campaign with the Harris campaign talking differently about the border than they have in the past.
Yes.
So
timing suspect, but I will not make it political. But I think anybody recognizing the cost of having an open border has to acknowledge that we have an open border right now. I don't care what side you're on. The fentanyl deaths, the mm-hmm. human trafficking, which I'm sure all of this will be covered. Mm-hmm. But we know that there's criminal enterprises. We know there's gangs. We know there's cartels. And all of that seems to originate at the border.
Absolutely. And so, Kathleen, I know that you're friendly with some of the folks that are going to be at the forum.
Yes.
I've actually had the opportunity to go down and work operations with them on the border and see it firsthand for myself.
Yes.
And really what people need to understand about the situation at the border is that the trafficking of the people, the movement of the people, it's $6,000 per head for three tries to get across the border. Then the cartels, and you have to pay that to the cartel.
Right.
The cartels then turn around and take all of that money and they parlay it into the drug trade, their infrastructure, their intelligence. They are so well outfitted. Our law enforcement on the front line down there, Border Patrol, they're outmatched in equipment and resources because this is a multi-billion dollar industry for the cartel. So of course they are happy with people that are able to be trafficked across the border because they make so much money.
I've talked to some people in law enforcement, actually not in Arizona, in other parts of the country, that says it's approaching a $1 trillion industry. That there's so much money being made. And it's at our expense. It's at the citizens, I believe, of the United States' expense. I have to tell you, this panel, Heather Lappin, wonderful. I know everyone from Cochise County, Robert Watkins, who's a operations commander, really solid guy. Brian McIntyre, who's the current county attorney, and he prosecutes crimes. Like he's one of the few county attorneys in the state that actually prosecutes people that are breaking the law. They can't do immigration law, but once you're here and you break the law, Brian has been very aggressive. And Lori Zucco just ran and won she still has to get to the general, but the writing campaign, because unfortunately Brian didn't get enough signatures to get on the ballot. So I know. So that's why Lori Zucco will be replacing him. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
There was a look of shock on Josh's face.
I thought he wasn't running again. I just thought that was the case.
Well, he's not running again because of a lack of signatures. But what's interesting is that Cochise County, and Sheriff Daniels is down there, and I'm sure he's so busy, but the gotaways is where the most danger is, because if you don't know who's here, you don't know what they're capable of, you don't know what their backgrounds are. We go back to 9/11, we just marked that anniversary again, and we didn't know that those people were being trained to crash planes into buildings. We had no idea. And so the concern for me, and this is what keeps me awake, is who are these people and what are they conspiring to do?
Yeah, and there's a deeper and uglier concern here as well. You know, sometimes people want to be a gotaway because they didn't have the $6,000. So if you're a male and you don't have the $6,000 to cross the border, you're going to mule the drugs across the border. That is your job. That's how you pay it back to the cartel. If you're a female and you don't have the $6,000, you're going to come here and you're going to work it off across the country being sexually exploited. So they have to stay hidden because they're coming here and they're being held by the cartels, because the cartels always get their money. We know that.
Yeah. Well, and the cartels, again, have control. The cartels are in control of our border right now, which means we don't really have a border. And so you've got that issue. We have to go to a short break, and then we come back. You've seen the film, I Take It?
Yes.
Okay, so without giving it away, and we want people to come and engage in this, I want to talk a little bit more about how they can do that. But I want to hear more about the film and what people that they come to this, what they can expect.
Sure.
And why Tucson Crime Free is thinking that this is something that they should sponsor. So kind of...
Perfect.
Think about those during the break. We are talking to Josh Jacobson from Tucson Crime Free Coalition. They do great work here, not only in Southern Arizona, but across the state. And you're listening to Win Tucson on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. And we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Win Tucson on 1030 The Voice. This Friday, we're talking about the hidden border crisis, gotaways, a film that has been produced by Epic TV, which is part of Epic Times. And Josh, you've seen this film.
Mm-hmm.
So is it worth seeing?
Absolutely. So it runs for about 50 minutes. And what it really does, it tells the story of what's happening at the border from multiple angles. So, of course, it talks about the human trafficking element. It talks about the drug element. It talks about the issues that happen in border communities. And you mentioned earlier that down in Cochise County, Brian McIntyre prosecutes people. And Sheriff Daniels is a great sheriff. So the downside to that is what happens? You actually have people that end up in a little teeny tiny jail in a small county in Arizona that has a limited amount of budget, but it's getting full of folks that not you know, shouldn't necessarily be in their jails. So it puts a tax on the budget.
Shouldn't be in their country.
Shouldn't be in the country. Shouldn't be here at all, right?
Right.
We should be thinking about a better process and securing the border and just clearing the situation up. Obviously, we know it's a political football, and at times I think that they just, you know, federal government simply doesn't want to fix it because it's not that hard.
Right.
It's not that hard at all. But here we are. And so this tells all different angles, and it really gives people a perspective to think about other than, you know, just what they see on the news. You know, just the constant messaging we're seeing, it goes deeper, and the people that are going to be speaking on the forum are going to be able to bring actual experiences of what they see and live with their, you know, day-to-day lives down there.
Well, and I think the panel that you're bringing together, so if you want to attend this, I highly recommend it. It's $10.
$10, $15 day of. Go to TucsonCrimeFree.com to get your tickets. Saturday, September 28th at the Maverick. There will be a menu will be available. Of course, our good friend Grant Krueger will be there mixing drinks behind the bar. I don't know if that's actually true, but the bar will be open.
Well, we'll call him and tell him we said that. So now he has to show up on the 28th. And Grant, we're sorry, but we want you there. And this is 6622 East Tancredi Road, mm-hmm. Just for anybody who doesn't know where the Maverick is. And so you're not only are you going to get to hear the film and see the film, you're going to get to socialize with people that have this concern. You're going to hear from prosecutors. You're going to hear from law enforcement. And the mistake to make is in Pima County that we're not the border, but this issue affects us even more because when you come in, you don't stay at the border. You disperse. As we know, people in New Jersey are talking about the border.
Yes.
But Pima County for sure is on the front lines. So having... I think it's great to have two people from sheriff's offices, Heather Lappin, who's running for sheriff right now in Pima County, and Robert Watkins, who works for Sheriff Daniels. But the prosecution is key because if people arrest people and you don't have the political will to prosecute, what a useless exercise that is. And I think it demoralizes and frustrates those people that are on the border. Especially, I know our Border Patrol agents are, they took an oath.
Right.
To uphold the laws, uphold the Constitution. And clearly, and you brought up this point, with no political will to shut down the border, they really can't do their job. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing them resign. We're seeing, unfortunately, suicides. We're seeing a huge demoralization. And I think it's an attack on that institution, on that organization of law enforcement. And so... I haven't seen this film, but I highly recommend it to anybody who wants a deep dive into what's really happening at the border without a political lens, but just factual.
Yeah, absolutely. And you asked why did the Tucson Crime Free Coalition think that this was appropriate to show in the community? So just to remind everybody, the Tucson Crime Free Coalition, we are a nonprofit, volunteer-run, nonpartisan advocacy group where we're just trying to create a safer community for all. Kevin Daly and Monica Carlson are my co-steering leaders. And we're really focusing on what's going on with fentanyl and the effects on our community. And so, as you mentioned, Pima County is on the front line. We've got the largest stretch of border in the country, 127 miles in Pima County. And over 50% of all the fentanyl that's interdicted in the United States comes from Arizona. Most of it's coming through Pima County. So some of the comments that we get from people in the community is, you know, you guys are doing a great job. Thank you for what you're doing. But you know you're never really going to make an impact because the border's open and fentanyl's coming through. And you just have to look at our streets to see the devastating impact.
Yeah.
So our whole thought is let's start connecting the dots for people. Let's start educating people on how this is truly impacting our community, our loved ones, our businesses. You know, Tucson has a 20% poverty rate. And fentanyl is almost free. 50 cents a pill right now on the streets.
It's the cheapest drug that you can get. The other thing that people don't realize, I have a child that works for the state, and his caseload is such that he gets maybe 15, 20 babies a month that are being born with fentanyl in their system. And there's a whole industry now to take care of fentanyl babies. The other thing we have is we have 300,000 missing illegal immigrant children. And I don't care what party you are. That is a humanitarian crisis being created by an open border and all the other things that we talked mm-hmm. about today. And is that just Tucson's problem? No, it's not just Tucson's problem, but we are literally the front door for this. So we don't have enough money and resources to facilitate everything that needs to be done. But I think by bringing attention to it, good for you, good for your organization, and good for not politicizing it. I used to say the predators don't give a ding about how we vote. They don't. They are in it for the money. They're in it for the power. And we as community members better stop fighting over the things that don't matter and focus on the things that do. Right. And that's going to take everybody coming together. And I don't care what party you are.
Mm-hmm.
And Republicans don't hold that against me. And Democrats know that I have a sane mind on Fridays for sure. but isn't that your thought? I mean, Josh, that this isn't going to take it. One party can't solve this.
No, it's going to be up to the voters, really.
Right.
You know, people need to get educated on the subject, and they also need to understand, you know, there's a reason why fentanyl is nearly free. You know, it is so easy to move. It can come into the country so easily.
It's addictive.
It's super addictive. It's deadly. It's the number one killer of youth in our community. We're losing 100,000 people a year to it. But the other thing is you have to understand that...
Is that 100,000 in Arizona or 100,000 across the country?
I believe it's across the country. Right. We're losing 100,000 people
a year. And I think we're on the third year, so I think we're over 300,000 on that too.
Right. And so the thing is when people get so addicted to fentanyl and they're so stuck in the substance use disorder, well, guess what? They also become prey to other types of organized crime, like organized retail theft. We've seen it here in Tucson, where if you've got a terrible habit and you don't have the money to pay for it, well, guess what? You're going to get a list of things to go and steal from big box stores and pharmacies so that you can actually go and then buy your fentanyl. So it's this giant circle of just issues that keeps going and going.
And to that point, I live way out east side. And in the last 3 weeks, I've gotten more and more reports of theft happening in my neighborhood. And we're on 3.5 acres. So like there shouldn't be that many. I'm not in a neighborhood where the houses are right next to each other. And yet within a few miles of my home, there's the theft is increasing. I don't think that's by accident. I think I don't know that we can't say it's for exactly what this crime is, but when theft increases and you don't have enough resources to fight it, obviously people are stealing things for,
right.
And I think the drug crisis. Sometimes I'm out very early in the morning having to go to meetings or whatever, and we're talking like I may be driving up to Phoenix or whatever, and 4 or 5 in the morning, and I'll come to a crosswalk and there'll be 7. I call them zombie people in their shopping carts, mm-hmm. getting ready to move because the sun's about to come up. And it just is sad to me the quality or lack of quality of life that people have. And we're contributing to that by not securing our border and by allowing this to continue.
Right.
And I think there's got to be a political will, not necessarily political, but there's got to be a political will to do something different. How's this going to change? How are we going to fix this?
Well, the big thing is first up is we need to start educating people on what the reality is. People are so stuck in their habits of watching whatever mainstream media they do, and so they only get half the story.
Right.
You know, so one of the best ways to actually tell a story is to hear it from the people that are truly living it. So that's the big thing. You know, the other thing you mentioned is the East Side. The East Side, this is actually a comment that's not necessarily related to the gotaways, but you know, the East Side is an up and coming area. It's been so for a while for crime. And unfortunately, it's because we've got the free buses that take people out to certain parts of that area and just
we call them the crime buses.
The free crime bus. And that's also a way that drugs are moved around the community.
I've seen people in parking lots doing whatever. You know, it looks suspicious to me. I call things in. I'm sure the sheriff and the TPD are just so glad I'm out there. But I think you have to be aware. Obviously, this person, the last assassination attempt on Trump, some random woman saw this guy and she got his license plate and followed it. So don't underestimate. If you see something that doesn't feel right, say something. I think we have to be willing at least to do that. Don't intercede. Don't become Rambo. Don't try to jump in. But if you can make an observation or take a picture or show something, we can all contribute to try to help law enforcement do their job. And then I think, again, on prosecution, we're going to really need to put pressure on our prosecutors. Yep. Here.
This will be a conversation for another time, but it's really good that you're calling things in, because you know the whole thing about addiction is there's that point in time when the person decides enough's enough, I'm ready to start making changes. If law enforcement actually has the ability to interface with some of these folks, the next conversation we might have could be about the Pima County Transition Center and all of the work that's being done there to connect people to services, support, treatment as they're coming out of the Pima County jail, all because they potentially got arrested for just something that got them there in the first place. But connecting people to support and services, that is much better, is much more humane than just letting people live
and wander on the streets. So next Saturday, September 28th, 2024, from 12 to 4, the film will start around 1, but please get there. Register online. You save yourself $5. Buy yourself a drink. And so you go to TucsonCrimeFree.com and register. And then there'll be a discussion afterwards with people in law enforcement, people who prosecute. And this will give you a chance to ask the questions that maybe you don't get a chance to ask of the experts.
Right.
And then you can be one of the most smart people in your friends group because you went to this, because we only have smart people that listen to our radio show here. And I so appreciate that Tucson Crime Free Coalition is taking the time to do this. So for your tickets, next Saturday, September 28th, TucsonCrimeFree.com, get your tickets, get educated, get smart, and then go vote. And Josh, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks so much for having me. Nice to see you, Kathleen.
Yeah. Okay. So when we get back, we're going to jump into the propositions. I know you guys have been waiting. It's Kathleen Wynn. You're listening to Wynn Tucson on 1030 The Voice. Welcome back to Wynn Tucson on this Friday with temperatures under 100. I am so happy. This is why we live here. Thank you. And we have a very, very big ballot coming up. When you get it, it'll probably weigh 2 pounds when it comes in your mailbox. There are so many propositions, and we are going to jump in, and I have a special guest, Joel Strabella. Did I do okay? Am I, just correct me, because I...
Strabella.
Strabella. Okay. I'll get it right. Before we're off the air, I will have Strabella correct. All right, we'll work on it. Joel has come in to talk to us about, we're going to see how far we get. There's many propositions. We're not going to try to get them all done today. I'd rather take time and educate the listeners. So we're going to start with Proposition 133, which requires partisan primary elections. And so go ahead and let the listeners know what that means, and I'll have some questions.
Okay. In the Constitution in Arizona today, the Constitution specifies that we have direct primaries in Arizona.
And direct being?
Direct means the political parties run primaries. All the political parties get to decide what kind of primary that they run, but it's a direct partisan primary. What Proposition 133 intends to do is mandate partisan primaries in Arizona. It was a legislative referral in answer to Proposition 140, which wants to change our election and create California-style jungle primaries. What Proposition 133 is mandates partisan primaries, which means political parties in Arizona that are official political parties run their own primaries and decide the type of primaries they want to run.
So we're talking Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Green Party, no labels party?
Correct.
Okay. Did I miss any?
You didn't miss any.
Okay, good. So those five people, those five groups could have political primaries currently in Arizona. And you just mentioned 140. So 140 cleared a hurdle today. Maricopa County judge said that they could remain on the ballot, but the people that are contesting it are now going to appeal it to the Arizona Supreme Court. We had Scott Musi on yesterday talking about 140 from Arizona Free Enterprise. And these propositions are in direct conflict with each other.
Correct.
So if we vote them both in, God help us, if we do, who wins?
The proposition that gets the most votes wins. So yes on 133, no on 140.
Okay. And we're not even talking, we talked about 140 yesterday, but we're not going to, it still may not make the ballot at this point. So we're going to wait on 140. But 133, so a yes vote amends the Constitution. And anything with a one in front of it actually changes the Arizona Constitution, which I'm not a big fan of, but here we are. And to require partisan primaries, which prohibits open primaries. So because what this stands for, this is a more conservative way to deal with elections. Am I wrong to think that?
No, you are correct. What the party provides is vetting of candidates. And you know that the candidate represents the principles that the party behind them that they're supporting.
I also didn't mention independents. So there's independents, and they're considered a political party.
In essence, yes.
Okay. You can register as an independent. So
right.
You can register as Green. You can register as Republican or Democrat. You can register as a Libertarian. So, and then a no vote leaves the constitutionally defined partisan primaries with no prohibitions against alternative primary regulations. So if we voted this down and voted yes for 140, we would then have everything that 140 brings, jungle primaries and everything we talked about yesterday.
Correct.
Okay. Is this a good solution to what's happening currently, 133?
It is a good solution in that it protects political parties and how we run elections in Arizona. 66% of Arizonans are members of a defined political party. 34% are independents. And what our Constitution guarantees is that everybody can vote in the existing primaries in Arizona, provided they are a member of a political party or they request a ballot from a political party.
So independents in a primary can request a Republican ballot or a Democrat ballot.
Correct.
Is there anything else they can... Well, let's say there was a Libertarian candidate. Could they request a Libertarian ballot? I don't think so.
The Libertarian and Green parties are closed primaries, so you can only vote if you're a Libertarian in the Libertarian primary.
Got it. So the only way an independent can vote in a primary in Arizona currently is through the Republican or the Democrat lane.
Correct.
Okay. And then in the general, obviously, anybody who's registered to vote legally can vote.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Anything else we should know about 133?
No.
Okay. So we will go to 134. And 134 sounds so official. Geographic distribution requirement for citizen initiative signatures. So tell me about that.
So today, citizens' initiatives require petitioners to collect a certain number of signatures across the entire state of Arizona to get a citizens' initiative on the ballot.
Are these all citizens' initiatives?
No. The only two citizens' initiatives in this election are Prop 139, the abortion initiative, and Prop 140, the jungle primary and ranked choice voting initiative.
Okay.
The other 11 are legislative referrals.
Okay. So our legislature put these on the ballot?
Yes, the legislature put these 133, 134, and 135 on the ballot.
Okay. So what is the breakdown?
So 130, for a proposition that changes Arizona revised statutes or Arizona law, you only need 10% of the vote. 10% of the Arizona voters who voted in the previous governor election. So that's about 240,000 voters. For a constitutional amendment, you need 15%, which is about 384,000 voters.
Right.
And for a referendum, which we don't have today, you need about 127,000 voters. to signatures to qualify the measure for a ballot initiative. What this does right now, today, special interests collect signatures from the two major parties the two major cities in Arizona, Pima and Maricopa. 75% of Arizonans live in Pima and Maricopa County.
With 60% being Maricopa.
Correct.
Okay.
It's actually 61% in Maricopa, 14% in Pima, and then the other 25% live in the rest of the state.
Which is 13 other counties.
Correct. Okay. And what this proposition does is it's pretty much keeps the same percentages, but it requires the percentages from each of the 30 legislative districts. So what it's going to force citizens' initiatives to do is to collect signatures from all 30 legislative districts across Arizona, rather just from high-density population centers like Phoenix and Tucson.
Will they have to do it by, how do I want to say this? There's more population in Maricopa, so will there be a percentage of that can go Maricopa, or is it just needs it to be in all 15 counties or all 30 legislative districts?
It's all 30 legislative districts, and remember,
is there a percentage?
Many of our legislative districts have fingers that reach into Maricopa County.
Okay.
So, I think it's eight legislative districts do not have some finger
in Pima or Maricopa.
Correct.
Okay.
So it empowers the voters across the state to participate in supporting or not supporting a citizens' initiative versus paying signature collectors to collect signatures in high-density population centers, which means we're subject to the whims of Phoenix and or Tucson.
We call it the Kingdom of Maricopa, and they make a lot of decisions for the rest of the state.
So a yes vote essentially requires collecting signatures all across the state and brings in the rural or low population density areas into the ballot initiative process, which is a good thing because these initiatives affect everybody in the state, which means everybody in the state should participate in either garnering support or not garnering support for these initiatives.
So if someone were to go get signatures, but let's say there was three legislative districts where they could not get any signatures, then this would not, with the new language, then there would not be, that would not be able to be put on the ballot?
Correct. Even if they get enough signatures across the state, my understanding is this, if a single legislative district did not have enough signatures, it would not make it to the ballot. That is the way I read the amendment.
So one little legislative district could have a lot of power.
Correct.
Okay, that's good. I like that. Anything else? So, and this was a referral from the legislature?
Yes.
And is it because the smaller counties were feeling that they were not being represented?
No, it's because most citizens' initiatives come from activists that focus their attentions in these larger population centers. And they don't spend the resources to garner support in the outlying rural communities. So they're trying to empower all of Arizonans instead of just a few Arizonans.
To participate in the legal process that affects them once these laws are passed.
Correct.
And has this been challenged at all?
I am unaware of any challenges at this time.
Okay. And did this have bipartisan support?
It was passed by both houses to make it to the ballot.
Okay. So this looks like that this might be something that everyone should be able to get behind.
I believe so.
Okay.
It's good for Arizona.
We are going to get started on 135, but we're going to have to take a break here in about a minute and a half. So 135, legislative limits on governor emergency powers. Is this a reaction to COVID, she pondered?
Yes, it is.
Do we not want our governor having emergency powers over us?
We want the governor to have emergency powers to handle emergencies like fires, floods, those kinds of things. But we don't want to have the governor to have the emergency powers to extend this emergency forever or what seems like forever, like he did in COVID.
Right. Well, our gyms were closed, our Home Depots and strip clubs were open, and we had a lot of in churches. We had a lot of decisions that were made based on the governor's power. So when we come back, we are talking to Joel Strabala.
Strabala.
Oh my goodness! You're going to correct me. It's all good. We will delve into Proposition 135, which puts legislative limits on the governor's emergency powers. And so you are listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. I know these propositions are like giving you all a headache, but it's really important that you understand what you are voting for and what you're voting against. Joel will be here when we get back, and please stay with us through this break, and we'll finish strong heading into the weekend. Okay, it is Friday. You guys are doing great. I know this is arduous process, but I want you to be smart. Proposition 135, which we started to talk about before the break, I think is a direct result of, I'm going to say, abusive powers that happened during COVID. We weren't the only state that had abusive powers, a lot of decisions, a lot of businesses, restaurants in particular, were negatively impacted. And so it's important that people understand that this isn't trying to take away power from the governor, but this is about limiting powers so that the governor's declaration of emergency and emergency powers automatically terminates after 30 days unless the legislature extends it. So it's not a blank check.
Correct. Most of the governor's emergency powers are defined in the ARS today. And a governor can declare an emergency and extend that emergency in 30-day increments for up to 120 days. After 120 days, the legislature can continue that emergency with concurring with the governor's policy. What this piece of legislation does is adds language to the Constitution limiting the governor's ability to declare an emergency and use emergency powers to a maximum of 30 days unless the legislature concurs with the emergency or the legislature terminates that emergency early.
And when out of session, because our legislators are not in session 12 months a year, the legislature, with just a third of the members of each house, can call a special session.
Correct, which is a good thing, because today they require two-thirds of each house to call themselves into a special session. So with one-third of each members, they can call themselves in a special session to represent the voters in adjusting or addressing an abuse of power by the governor in declaring emergency or using his emergency powers to do whatever he needs to do to handle the emergency.
Or she needs to do.
Pardon me.
That's okay. I just wanted to, we have a female governor right now. And so a yes vote amends the Arizona Constitution to limit the governor's emergency powers to a maximum of 30 days unless explicitly modified by the legislature. Now, special sessions. Right now, it does take two-thirds to have a special session, irrelevant of if there's an emergency. Does that change this for all special sessions or just those related to emergencies?
To my knowledge, this simply is addressing emergencies.
Okay. Because I know that there's a push and pull that goes on with the legislature wanting to do special sessions when things come up. So you'd almost have to determine it's an emergency in order to get only a third.
Right. And because it's in the Constitution under the governor emergency powers, that it's only addressing calling a special session to address those emergencies.
This also prevents the governor from declaring a continuous or back-to-back emergency.
Correct. The governor can't continue that emergency by slightly modifying the conditions or the criteria for declaring the emergency. It has to be a fundamentally new and different emergency for the governor to extend a state of emergency.
So if we had a medical emergency like COVID and then we had fires, those would be two different
emergencies. Okay. And the governor could continue the emergency across the state for that.
And this is not meaning to curtail the governor or or to take away power. It's just that it is putting in time measures so that they can have better controls over the abuse of power.
It puts in time measures to constrain the governor, because the governor has pretty much an open book for emergency powers once he declares an emergency. And it empowers legislative oversight to control or limit what the governor can do, because the legislatures represent the people. And the people should be involved in these emergencies that are, not necessarily emergencies or have been abused over time. So legislatures are accountable to the people more often than the governor is. And getting your legislatures to help limit or curtail these, some what I'll call a frivolous emergency, yeah, is a good thing for Arizona.
Well, COVID was not that long ago. And the COVID protocols that got put in place really did have a negative effect on so many businesses, but it was selective, because certain businesses were allowed to remain open, where restaurants, churches just were not, or you had a social distance, and you had to wear masks. And there was a lot of mandates that came from our governor's office to the citizens of Arizona, and it wasn't happening across the country, but yet we were affected by it. And there was a financial impact to many businesses and people across the state. So I think it's great that the legislature put this together. I hope that people understand how we got here and why we're trying to do this. Again, it's not that the governor can't declare an emergency. They're just going to have to keep checking in to see if the reaction or what we're doing in case of an emergency is the right response according to the people. And who's going to let the governor know is the legislature, and they're going to have a right to vote on whether or not it gets continued or not. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. It's always the unintended consequences of these things that cause problem. There's a point made on here, and I just want to share it with the listeners, that Arizona legislators face re-election every 2 years. The governor's in there for four. So if this increases government accountability and legislative oversight of the governor's emergency powers, the legislature is saying this is good for Arizona.
Yes. And I think many Arizonans would agree with that.
Well, we will see. I think we hope we never have to go back to another time of medical emergencies and COVID. And I think there was a pushback, because we have doctors, we have medical experts, but there was a kind of a lockstep with certain industries and pharmaceutical companies to tell us how we were going to live our lives. And it took away our freedoms. And I don't think people want to go back to that. And I think it's good that they want to be able to have a shorter time period to evaluate what's happening. And that's what I see this as, a reaction to what happened under the Ducey administration. So, can we get 136 in?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Allow legal challenges to initiatives. Well, that's a good thing, considering we've just gone through three, right? So tell us about Proposition 136.
So 136 adds language to the Constitution to allow legal challenges to citizens' initiatives prior to them being ratified by the voters. So that those legal challenges can start from the moment the citizens' initiative is filed till until the initiative is made into law or a constitutional amendment.
So that includes it being voted in?
Correct.
Okay.
Because today, many legal challenges for citizen initiatives happen after the voters approve them.
Because they're unconstitutional, or we missed something, or people, mostly unconstitutional, is the main reason why things get...
So legislative referrals go through a vetting process for constitutionality by the legislature before they even get voted on and make it to the ballot. Citizens' initiatives do not. is all the Secretary of State does and ensures that the paperwork is properly filed so that it can be a, become a citizen's initiative. Then they go collect signatures, and the second Secretary of State only does process checks. Did you collect enough signatures? Are the signatures valid? Did they cross the threshold? Did you dot your I's, cross your T's type stuff? But the Secretary of State does not confirm, verify, or even address the constitutionality of any citizen's initiative. So this forces the judiciary to address and answer these questions to test the constitutionality at any time during the process, up to and including and even after the voters vote the citizen's initiative into law.
So this says it allows state court lawsuits to test, like you just said, the constitutionality. And there's two constitutions. There's the U.S. Constitution and there's the Arizona Constitution. And so adverse findings can be appealed to the Arizona Supreme Court.
So if one side loses, they are allowed to appeal to the next level, the judiciary.
And these cases are supposed to go fairly quickly, correct?
Correct. It forces the judiciary to be quicker.
This also requires the Secretary of State to not certify the initiative or to prohibit adding the proposition to the ballot.
Correct. If it fails the constitutionality test, it cannot be added to the ballot. That is the explicit language of this amendment.
Is that only after you have a ruling from the Arizona Supreme Court? Or if you get to, let's say, a superior court and both parties agree with the ruling? It never happens, but if that were to happen?
Well, take 140. It's been...
It's still in process.
It's past the deadline for putting ballot measures on the ballot. So
right.
140, the language for 140 will be on the ballot.
Right.
All across the state. The question is, will the voters' votes be counted? And that's what's going through the courts right now.
Right. And the argument is about the 40,000 duplicate signatures. And without those, it didn't have enough...
Correct.
Signatures. So it should never have gotten this far.
Correct. And remember,
did the challenge come late or what?
The challenge has been in process for a while, but the bottom line, this is changing elections and 40,000 duplicate signatures. Well, do we really want that involved in changing our elections? This doesn't make sense.
And that the Secretary of State was a personal advocate for this proposition.
Yeah. And we're talking 140.
140.
Not 133.
Is it 133 or 134?
133 is the one for open primaries, to mandate open primaries. Okay. That is the
I'm sorry,
antithesis.
Listeners. I don't want you to be confused because I'm confused. So.
Yeah. 133 is the antithesis of 140.
Okay.
So, and I want to repeat, yes on 133,
no,
no
on
140.
If you even get a chance to vote, let's hope that the Supreme Court understands the significance of what they're asking because it's torn from the pages of California election law.
Correct.
And we really don't need to fix problems that we don't have. We will have you back because there's many more propositions. I want to thank you for all the work you've done and all the research you've done. You're educating people across the valley, and it's so important that people understand and don't just leave these blank. We need everyone to be smart about how they're voting. And Joel, thank you.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Strabella. I'm gonna say it to myself all weekend long, so next time I see you, I'll say your last name first. I want to thank everyone for joining us today and for welcoming me back, and we're going to have an amazing week next week. There's all kinds of lawsuits and exciting stuff going on. I know lawsuits shouldn't make me happy, but you got to fight back. And you've been listening to Kathleen Wynn on Wynn Tucson on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Go out and stay safe, have a great weekend, and enjoy the cooler weather. Go Wildcats.